Welcome to the healing power of your dreams on UK Health Radio with your dream divas, Teresa Chung
and Kelly Sullivan Walden. Each week, along with our recurring dream guest presenters and special guests, we'll explore the healing potential of your intuition by day and your dreams by night.
So join us
live each week
and let's discover the unexpected together.
Deep in your heart.
Every symbol, every story leaves a breadcrumb trail. The healing power of your dreams is calling through the night, turning broken pieces into wings, turning shadows into light. The healing power of your dreams knows more than you believe. A message from your deeper self. A miracle while you sleep.
I'm standing in the middle of a vast old house with hundreds of rooms. Every door is swinging open and shut. Behind one door, somebody is calling my name.
Can you help me? Behind another, I've lost something, another voice cries. Don't leave me. Another keeps asking the same question over and over and over again. I run to one room, but before I can answer, three more doors burst open. The voices grow louder, faster, more desperate. Everyone needs me. Everyone wants me. Everyone is calling my name. I am running now. I'm trying. I'm falling. Then I collapse onto the floor and scream, I can't do this anymore. Everything suddenly falls silent. At the end of the corridor stands a little girl, no older than seven. She's smiling. In her hand is a tiny silver key. She walks toward me and says, you've spent so long opening everyone else's doors. You've forgotten your own. She places the key in my hand. I unlock a little door I never noticed before. Inside is a beautiful garden. There's birdsong, sunlight, a wooden bench beneath an old tree. I sit down. I take a breath. And as I breathe, every other door in the house quietly closes by itself. I wake up crying, but somehow at peace.
And the Oscar goes to...
ta-da!
Miss Kelly Sullivan Walden for that dream reading. Now, that's what I call a blockbuster dream, isn't it?
You started it, Teresa. Forget about horror films. This is every anxiety rolled into one. I mean, it didn't have blood and guts, but it was very stressful. It's one of those, no matter how fast you run dreams, you never actually get to where you want to get to.
A bit like trying to keep you on topic in this show, Kelly.
Oh, I resemble that remark. Excuse me, my tangents are highly intuitive.
They just happen to be intuitively noisy and very scenic.
Okay. Dream divas like myself, we just can't help ourselves. But seriously, what I love about this dream, let's talk about the dream, Teresa, is how brilliantly it captures overwhelm. These voices aren't just noisy, they're relentless, they don't pause, they don't say, take your time, honey. They're all saying, me first, all the subpersonalities are out, everybody wants me first.
Yeah, it's nightmarish, isn't it? And dreams often exaggerate our emotions so we can really feel what's happening beneath the surface. Because often in our waking life, we deny or repress all that. This house isn't haunted, it's exhausted. Every room is another responsibility, another demand from someone, another expectation, another person needing something. It's enough to make anyone's nervous system wave a little white flag.
Yeah, and then... as sometimes is happens and the dream changes, not just because the dreamer becomes stronger necessarily, but because everyone else disappears because of one tiny little girl carrying one tiny little key. Oh my gosh, I absolutely adore that little girl.
So do I, because children in dreams often symbolize the wisest, most authentic part of ourselves, the part untouched by perfectionism, the part that remembers something we've forgotten. And what does she say? You've spent so long opening everyone else's doors, you've forgotten your own. I mean, if dreams handed out Oscars, that line wins best supporting symbol, doesn't it? I mean, it really
Oh,
does.
absolutely. And let's talk about the garden. I think that is such a special reward aspect of the dream. It's no accident that the dreamer's sanctuary isn't another room, isn't a gift. It's nature, it's life, it's breathing space. Dreams have the extraordinary way of reminding us that peace isn't something that we have to earn. It's something inherent. It's just our nature, something that we just have to take a little bit of time to enter.
And here's the stunning part. The dream doesn't say she has to close every other door herself. The moment she finally steps into her own place of inner peace, the doors quietly close on their own. There's such profound wisdom there. Sometimes the answer isn't trying harder, sometimes it's working on ourselves first.
It's true. But I know everybody's assuming these are either our dreams, but truly, we should talk about whose dream this is,
Yeah,
Teresa.
it comes from one of our wonderful listeners, Kristen, if you're
It's
listening. I
one of
hope
our
you are.
listeners. It's not me.
Kristen,
It's not
who
you.
is currently caring 24/7 for her mother, who is living with severe dementia. She wrote to us saying she'd begun to feel as though everyone needed something from her every minute of every day. She felt guilty whenever she even thought about taking time for herself, but her dreaming mind wasn't asking her to become a better caregiver here. It was inviting her to become a kinder caregiver to herself.
Yep, which is dream wisdom for saying the most important act of caregiving is to not necessarily keep pouring from an empty cup. And in dream language, you can't keep opening everyone else's doors if you've locked yourself out of the special room that is yours, your own beautiful garden,
Yeah,
perhaps.
and that's the perfect way, Kelly, to welcome our first amazing guest today.
Yes. Oh, that's
Roy,
right. We have a guest.
we do. She
Recording
we've
in
got multiple
progress.
guests. We have a guest. Okay, and it's Roy Remmer. He's spent years helping caregivers discover that compassion isn't about endlessly giving until there's nothing left. It's about creating the inner steadiness that allows us to care without losing ourselves. And he is the author of a highly recommended book called Zen Caregiving: How to Care for Yourself While Caring for Others. An educator and end-of-life caregiver since 1997, he is executive director of Zen Caregiving Project in San Francisco and lead creator of the Mindful Caregiving Education Curriculum. A dedicated practitioner in the Zen tradition, he's certified by the Stanford University School of Medicine's Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, and by the Compassion Institute as a compassion cultivation training instructor. And you can find out more about him by visiting www.zencaregiving.org.
Roy, welcome to the show. I
Thank you.
thought that the dream that Teresa selected was absolutely written especially for today's conversation. So you wrote the book Zen Caregiving, and you actually are a Zen practitioner and you work at the Zen Hospice Center. Can you, I thought one of the things that I loved about your book is that you realized that you wanted to help to support caregivers, but you thought you would start earlier in the process. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we go by Zen Caregiving Project these days, but we're also known for most of our history as Zen Hospice Project. So when I started doing this work in 1997, I was sitting with people who were at the very end of their life, and I was observing what their families were going through. And then around 2015, we developed this curriculum that kind of reworked our wonderful training for hospice volunteers to make it relevant for what we describe as upstream family caregivers. So these are caregivers who are just starting off on their journey. And that's really why we changed the name, in fact, because with hospice in the name, if it wasn't frightening, it wasn't relevant to a lot of caregivers. And these are practices that really we work with for a lifetime. So the sooner we can begin, the better. And I was seeing the suffering that family members were experiencing much earlier in the process. And often, by the time someone is with their loved one at the end of life, they're experiencing some of the signs of burnout and just utter exhaustion. So I think of the approaches that I'm presenting in the book as moment-to-moment self-care. So as wonderful as a day at the spa might be, or a really special meal out somewhere, it can be hard for caregivers to find the time to, allow themselves that kind of luxury, if you will, that kind of rejuvenation. But actually, we can use the activities that we already engage in throughout our day to cultivate this kind of moment-to-moment self-care. And it can be as simple as just, pausing in a doorway and placing a hand upon the chest and following three breaths in and out. And if we can start to do that, we can allow ourselves to cultivate the kind of calm, the kind of self-awareness, the kind of focus that allows us to sustain ourselves in the role, even when it gets really, really crazy. Even when all those doors are open and they're screaming to us, I need this, I need this, I need this. So it's been wonderful to teach the classes that we offer and to see a sense of hope come back to family caregivers who are feeling so exhausted and who are bringing into the courses, really sadly, a sense of hopelessness, like they're not going to survive it, and then begin to feel like not only will they survive this, but they can actually thrive and grow in the experience.
I could not
So.
agree more, Roy, and thank you. Your book, it reminds me of that Star Wars. You are our only hope. It feels like this book does offer hope. But it's also deeply personal, this conversation to me, why I was so keen to talk to you, because I'm a full-time carer for my husband who has Alzheimer's. And self-care, which you write about in the book, is often at the bottom of my list of priorities. And you talk a lot about practicing mindfulness, but I find that excruciatingly hard because I'm a born fidget. I'm a born fidget, but in the first place. And also, I feel like I'm living two lives when you are a carer. I feel I'm present in neither. So, can you advise, offer some support and advice for someone like me, or a technique? Because I'm sure there are people listening to this show right now where what I'm saying would resonate. Because I just can't take 2 hours off to go and meditate, and
That's right.
sometimes being mindful just seems like ridiculous. I'm not criticizing what you're saying, but it just seems like I've got too many things to think about.
Sure.
Being mindful on top of that.
Yeah, I think it's important to differentiate between meditation and mindfulness. I consider meditation an activity, something we go and do. Whereas mindfulness, it's really just a state of being or a state of mind. So for the fidgeters, and there are many of them among us, I would advise, find a task that you already engage in. Maybe it's washing the dishes after a meal, folding laundry, something like that, and just watch your mind as you try to give your full attention to the task at hand. And start off by feeling, if you're washing dishes, what does it feel like to have water running over your hands, or the suds from the soap, or the weight of the plate or the mug, right? What does that feel like in the body? And then as your mind gets distracted toward, well, what is this situation going to look like a month from now, a year from now? Then come back, come back to the sensations in the hand. And when we notice and come back, that's when we start to change the neural pathways in the brain. That's the good stuff. A lot of people get frustrated when they get distracted, but that's when the work is really starting to happen,
Actually,
So,
crash course in being mindful in a way when you're a carer. I'm thinking of what you're saying, especially for people with dementia, where there is only the now. In some ways, would you think
That's
that
right.
someone with dementia can actually teach us how to be present, because they're in an eternal now. Past is gone,
That's
future
right.
is inconceivable.
And they're so perceptive to energy and emotions.
Yes.
So if we can ground ourselves in the present moment, it's much healthier for them and for us. Because as you say, they're
Yeah.
in this present moment.
They
And if
reflect
we,
back, don't they, the state of your inner world. I found it so
absolutely.
scary,
Yeah.
it's like an empathetic sponge as well. And
I
that's a
think that's
huge
right.
responsibility.
Yeah, so as a family member, it's understandable that we want to provide access to the past to our loved one who's losing those memories. But if
Yeah.
we can meet them with what's true right in this present moment, it has a way of settling things for them. It's not always the case. You know, some people living with a dementia-related illness, they're going to experience agitation no matter what we do. But I think, you know, it's just much more conducive to a calm, steady encounter if we ourselves are calm in the moment. And as I say, you know, they're so perceptive to the energy we're bringing into the conversation, into the encounter.
Thank you, Roy. We're going to continue this conversation after the first ad
Please.
break, because we're going to bring in someone who's going to bring in a spiritual dimension to this, and that the person maybe with dementia, what they're becoming, the soul they're becoming, and connecting to that. And we're thrilled you're here with us here, Roy, for the whole show, because we're going to
Yeah.
bring you in.
Yes, and we're going to take a quick break. I just wanted to acknowledge the quote that you had at the beginning of your book, Roy, that something, I can't say it exactly, Rosalind Carter said that there's only four types of people in the world. One that people that are caretakers, people that will be caretakers, people that were caretakers, or people that will need
That's right.
caretakers. So
Yeah.
this
It's
conversation is for
universal.
all of us.
Like
Yeah.
dreams,
That's
caretaking
right.
connects us all.
Absolutely. Okay, Teresa, I'm going to let you say it since this is a
Okay,
very
I love it.
emotional
Thank
show.
you, Kelly. Hold that dream. See
See you
you
on the other
on
side.
the other
Other
side.
side. That makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, dreamers. We're back, and we have been in conversation with Zen caregiver Roy Remmer, who is reminding us of the importance of self-compassion in caregiving. And in many ways, Kelly, would you agree here that when you are caregiving, as I know you are also caring for your elderly parents right now, if you haven't taken care of your inner world, integrated, to use Jungian psychology, or taken that time to heal yourself from the inside out through dreams and intuition, the journey of being a caregiver is so much harder.
Yeah, I'll just say that my sister is the primary caretaker of my my parents, and I get to step in. Gosh, I didn't know this was going to be such an emotional show. I was not expecting this, but it feels like such an honor to get to spend this time with them, because I don't know how long it's going to last. And I think, to Roy's point, the mindfulness, and I don't do it perfectly. Sometimes I get overwhelmed and I'll snap at my mom and say, "One thing at a time, Mom." But like, I do have to keep things one thing at a time. But for the most part, I'm getting to practice some mindfulness, just because of the notion that we only have such a short time and every moment feels precious. So I feel like that's kind of helping me to really enjoy this time and see it as a gift, even though, you know, it's hard sometimes.
Oh,
but
back
to you, Teresa, how do you do it? My God.
Bless you. It's a different journey when it's partner to parents, you know, because
yes,
it's kind of a reversal of the natural order. You're taking care of who took care of you. And this is different, but you're right. And I think every caregiver should actually, if I was president or prime minister, should have a copy of Zen Caregiving.
You should be.
While we're on the subject of inner healing, I'm going to bring into the conversation Stephanie Banks. She's a highly sought after intuitive channel, mentor and guide who helps people connect on the soul level. She channels from the perspective of any soul currently on the planet, souls on the other side, purely non-physical beings such as spirit guides, as well as trees, animals and Gaia. As a conscious channel, Stephanie is both the vessel to receive the message as well as a guide to provide depth and context for the information that comes through. I found out about Stephanie after I read her book. A book I encourage everyone listening to seek out. It's called Joining Joni. And it was so moving and made me very tearful. And I actually read it prior to my husband's diagnosis. So it was almost like an invisible thread pulled me to it. And it's a story of her journey of caring for her mother's dementia, but how that journey opened up her intuitive abilities. That's an incredible thought, isn't it? How being a carer made her who she is today, which is an amazing channel. I mean, if you go and search her name, you'll find her on some many leading podcasts. And she's wonderful, actually, because she talks about spirituality in such a good-humoured way, as you will find out. Enough talk about me. First things first, Stephanie, welcome to the show. Can we just go right back to basics here? Because I can see some, that some people might struggle with that concept of channeling. Can you just do a basic, what is channeling? And did being a caregiver really help you discover you could actually do it? Or can you unmute?
And for the beautiful introduction. Okay, my definition of channeling is simply connecting to divine energy and wisdom. And that is something that is inherent to all of us. It is not a select few. It is universal. So anyone can learn to channel, but actually we're born channeling. We're born connected to the vast world and what is in the beyond and nature and souls and fairies. And I could go on and on and on, and you can see how lit up I am about it. But my journey with my mother's dementia actually did open up my awareness of the possibility of channeling a soul who is here on the planet in body. And I came about it simply because I had a best friend who was a very gifted channeler, and I was struggling in my relationship with my mom. I was frustrated, as Kelly was saying. I was snapping at her. We were snapping at each other. Everything was falling apart. And I asked my best friend, "Please, will you channel my mom's soul? I need to know, what are we here to do together? How can I support her? What does she need from me? Am I going to survive this? Am I going to get my needs met?" And I had this opportunity to ask that directly of my mom's soul while she was still here with me in body. And her soul answered all my questions. And it changed our relationship forever.
I love this perspective. And I have to do a pre-plug for Teresa's upcoming book about this as well. And I think this is probably the most important thing we can say, is that there's still a soul in there, and that soul can be communicated with. So on the surface, the ego is a bit fragmented, but if you, so what's, for the average person that's hearing this maybe for the first time, oh yeah, the person I'm caregiving for has a soul. I want to be able to communicate with them. And maybe they don't have access to you immediately, or maybe now they do, but what's something they can do to begin to communicate with the soul behind the behavior?
Well, actually, I would pull in what Roy was talking about before, because I can't hear the voice of souls or spirit if I'm not in quiet, a little bit of space, a little bit of quiet, a little bit of peace. And we can all bring that in any moment to a dynamic. So that's actually essential. The desire to connect on a deeper soul level is essential. And then the curiosity, what might that sound like? What might that be like? What question would I ask if I wanted to know something more or feel something more from this soul? And then breathe, get still, get quiet, listen. The first thing that comes through is the thing. Before we overthink it, before we run it up the flagpole of cognition and, wrestle it to the ground.
Oh, Stephanie, that's beautiful. Roy, I'm going to just ask you a question again. You've been listening to what Stephanie was saying about channeling. Would you say that channeling is akin to mindfulness? I'd love you to answer that, Roy. And then, Stephanie, if you could answer what Roy says.
Yeah, I love this question because this is a framework that I really don't work with very often. And so listening to you, Stephanie, makes me think that there's a lot of similarity. In the book, I tell a story about being with my mom toward the end of her life. And in that encounter, I tried to drop into present moment awareness in a way that all the dynamics of the relationship that we had established that were so conditioned over time, I tried to just let those all drop away. So what we were left with, and I feel like she was responding to that kind of approach. So where we found ourselves was just two human beings in this moment in time, in this common human experience of meeting each other in loving presence. Like all the son mother stuff, it kind of fell away and it was so beautiful. And to use more your language, I think in that moment, we were able to communicate soul to soul with each other. And it was so lovely. But it's really a requirement, I think, that you can find that quality of presence within yourself. And, we have these amazing mirror neurons in the brain. We're constantly relating to each other's energy. So if I can be grounded and still, the person I'm talking with, most of the time they'll meet me there. And that's when we can connect at that much deeper level.
Definitely.
I love that. And I want to add another element to this as well, because we can also be playful with another soul and invite in that energy of humor and playfulness. And this was something that really changed the energy between my mom and I. I think we have a tendency, I certainly did, to take dementia very seriously. Of course, it's big, it's heavy, it's serious, it's hard. And it's also childlike in some moments and playful in some moments and silly in some moments. And I think that's what was lacking for my mom. We were coming at her with all these, with serious faces and wanting to manage situations. But when I access that playful aspect of me, mirror neurons, right? Like that could be reflected to her. We could pass that back and forth. And we ended up being goofy and dancing in the kitchen and making up songs and being okay with nonsensical language when that's all she had. So that too, I think I would welcome into the field.
Oh,
Beautiful.
Stephanie,
My husband, like, he used to be very concerned about appearance and always looking a certain way. And now he just wander around in his pajamas outside, and all whatever, and garish colors and Star Wars t-shirts, and it's just lovely.
Oh, wow. I love that you brought in the sense of humor aspect, Stephanie. That feels so what I'm just sorting for the nuggets and what I heard from Roy, like that deep presence, and I'm hearing that from both of you, but also humor. And I was thinking about music, so I'm curious, a question for both of you. So I've got two questions for both of you. See how this weaves together. As Teresa knows, a book I wrote, shameless plug, as a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. So I'm always looking for
On
how
the
do we
cover of
mine.
that, everyone, she's covered in mud in a wedding dress drinking tea. There we are. That sums up the
You, Teresa. But I'm always on the hunt for how to transform the tragic into magic. How do you do that? And does music play a role at all? So let's start with you, Stephanie.
Okay, so I'm gonna go back to my days as a speech pathologist when we would use something called melodic intonation therapy with our patients. And whether it was a brain injury or a progressive neurological situation like dementia or Alzheimer's, we would use melody to help the person tap with the melody. And sometimes, because that routes things to the right hemisphere of the brain, you can get access to language, to words, to expression that you wouldn't otherwise have access to. So that's a little fun fact that lots of people don't know about, and you can use it with everybody. You can use it with elderly, with children, with anyone.
That's great. What about you, Roy?
Well, I would relate this to humor. I feel like music offers one an opportunity for uplift, whether it's the care or the person receiving care. And I would say that kind of uplift, that kind of levity or inspiration, just like humor is an essential human need. It doesn't go away. It doesn't go away in our experience of dementia. It doesn't go away if we're days away from our death. We need that. And so I think music can really provide that. It can, bring us to a place of melancholy as well, but that's not such a bad thing either.
It's
It can offer us a
cathartic.
moment of reflection.
Yeah, there's research, isn't it, to show listening to sad songs actually has the reverse effect. It boosts your mood because you don't feel alone because somebody else has had ha feels like you're feeling.
That's right. Yeah, a sense of connection, right?
And talking of connection, one of the things I love about this show is it brings together compassionate souls from across the world. Kelly and I like to think we're doing our bit for the UK-US special relationship, one dream, one laugh, and one slightly overexcited dream interpretation at a time. And now we're
I
bringing
resemble that remark.
and now we're bringing that circle a little closer to home with someone very special from the UK, but also Anne from Australia. She's a friend of mine. I hope I can say that. She's a beautiful soul, an intuitive channel, a cosmic compass. She's hugely popular with the Shift Network. When mania is a thing. Her name is Alexandra Wenman. Hi, Al.
Wow.
I love
Alex.
you.
Oh,
When
I
mania.
want to keep
Oh, my family are going to love
because
that.
Alex is also my friend Teresa.
I know.
I'm going to say a little more. So Alex is a much loved teacher of angels and alchemy. She's the pioneer of precious wisdom and priestess of the divine feminine, devoted to normalizing the conversation about spirituality and awakening. I love that. Alexandra brings the out there in here with her down-to-earth approach to channeling higher wisdom. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. And I think there's such a compatibility here. I love what Stephanie said about what channeling is. It's really just connecting to the energy. So you do that as well. So with regards to channeling, with regards to being Zen and caring for people, is there anything you would like to ask or mention in response to what Stephanie and Roy have brought into the conversation?
I just want to say I completely agree with everything that they've said, and there's so many different dimensions we can come at it from. I see almost like the whole consciousness of the world and the universe as being unconditional love, and we can tap into it at any point in time. I feel like there's so much I can talk to about this. I feel compelled though, like I always kind of tune in and see what needs to come to the show. And something I kind of feel like I want to mention is compassion and care into death. And this is some of the work that I do personally is helping souls pass over and the understanding that the soul is infinite and that we don't cease caring the minute that soul ascends or transcends, that there's still work to do on the other side. And sometimes I've had remarkable experiences, and I want to come to Stephanie on this. I want to see if she's had an experience of this as well. Because when I do death doula work, I often go part of the way across with the soul. And I've had many experiences with people and animals where I've gotten to witness their life review. And it's some of the most beautiful compassion. Now I'm going to cry. Some of the most beautiful, compassionate, humbling work you can do. I helped a man pass over about 10 years ago, and this morning I just felt compelled to message his sister, and he came in, and it turned out that his children, well, his daughter's now having a baby, so they're all still around and they come in all the time. But can I ask that of Stephanie first? Because she sounds like, I think that we have quite a lot in common, and I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet quite a lot.
That's beautiful. It gave me the chills. I'm at a loss now to try to isolate an example of this, but when you are willing to engage with someone on that soul level, the relationship
Recording in progress.
becomes much more rich and enriched as a result of it. So I love what you said, and yeah, I have had similar experiences, not with necessarily assisting souls with crossing over, but assisting the souls who are crossing or on the other side to maintain communication, to maintain their communication with one another, and that is a beautiful thing.
Thank you. And talking of a beautiful thing, I'm loving this conversation. And do remember that every dream you wake up with in the morning is a beautiful thing too. I'm bringing it back to the world of the dream, because
Yes.
dream work is an act of ultimate self-care, because it increases your self-awareness, which is the beginning of all healing. Because if you don't know or love or how to love or heal yourself, how can you even begin to understand, love, or heal others? Kelly, do you want to take it
So
to break
true.
now?
Oh, sure, Teresa. Of course, if you can't love or heal yourself, how can you begin to understand or give it to others? All right, everyone. We're going to a
Hold
quick
that
break. We'll
self-love dream, everyone. See you on the other side.
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, dreamers. We're back. And if you thought today's show couldn't get any more illuminating and heart-rendering, you are wrong, because we're going to welcome to this conversation a deeply cherished friend of the show. He's my friend, Teresa, more my friend than yours.
You're so
Anyway,
competitive.
he's respected the world over for his pioneering research and writing about the transformational healing power of altruism and promoting the dignity for deeply forgetful people and their careers. Stephen G. Post is the director of the Center for Medical Humanities, Compassionate Care, and Bioethics at the Stony Brook University Renaissance School of Medicine. And he also co-founded the Institute for Research on Unlimited Love, I love that there's research for unlimited love. He's the author of several books that are wonderful, including Why Good Things Happen to Good People, How to Live Longer, Happier, Healthier Life by the Simple Act of Giving. He's authored over 400 articles in peer-reviewed journals and has been interviewed by leading newspapers around the world. And that brings us
Thank
to
you,
here.
Kelly. And I loved you said carers, careers instead of carers. It
Oh, sorry.
funny.
Freudian slip.
If anyone could embody the Dalai Lama's mantra in a world where you can be anything, be kind, or my religion would be kindness, it is Stephen G. Post, isn't it, Kelly? Indeed, his last book, Pure Unlimited Love, did have a foreword by the Dalai Lama. Incredible. Stephen, thank you for being here. It's always such a joy when you join the show. I mean, I know you've been listening to this conversation. Is there anything you'd like to add from what you've heard from Roy, Stephanie, and Alexandra so far?
Well, I've really enjoyed everything I've heard. I had a clinical situation this morning, so I could only get into my office a few minutes ago, but I apologize for that interference. I think it's really wonderful to hear about people's attitudes toward deeply forgetful individuals. I do not appreciate the word dementia. It has now been removed from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, the so-called DSM-5. It's not there because they came to the conclusion that it is rather derogatory, diminishing, and demeaning. And so, what I have done over the years is try to change the language game so that people can notice not what's gone, but what's still there. That's sort of Larry Dossey's concept of noticing. And so I speak about deeply forgetful people, and I think it allows more continuity between them and us. Demented people, well, that just invites negative metaphors: husk, shell, gone, dead, whatever. And I've never liked it. My grandmother, who was a very famous writer in America, passed away from probable Alzheimer's disease many years ago. And when I was a boy, I would go into a nursing home, and she always came back to life. There were always these moments of unexpected lucidity. And so we did a study. This is a very practical thing, and we're utilizing it now with caregivers, a study of primary caregivers with the Gallup Organization, a national survey. And we found out that about half of caregivers, primary caregivers, will report that they have had these remarkable incidences of unexpected lucidity. And then we asked them, because I do a lot of positive psychology, we asked them, so what did that mean to you? I have to tell you that 90% of them said it was inspiring. It helped them as their caregiving responsibilities continued to know that mom or dad or whomever was still there, not gone. And one of my greatest mentors in life, Pastor Otis Moss, a great Baptist minister who's famous all over the world and a mentor for Oprah and others, he was in Detroit a few years ago. And I called him on my cell phone and I said, Pastor Moss, how's your sister? And she had been declining with dementia. And I asked him then, I said, do you think she's still there? And you know what he said to me, Teresa? And this is verbatim. He said, who am I to say that she's gone? For all I know, she's down at the metro station with one foot already on that train bound for glory. And you have to realize there's so many people who do not think that materialism is a full explanation of mind. There are these great new books and projects. And I think that we need to move into that kind of domain and realize that there's always someone there.
Oh, Stephen, thank you. Between worlds, I could not agree more. And talking about good move, bringing in a new domain, going to bring in one of our guest presenters now, who I know, Stephen, that you've met, the wonderful actor and intuitive life coach, Phil Webster, who was actually fresh, I have to say this, I'm just so exciting, from the set of Bridgerton.
I'm not, all of these NDAs that I signed, they're going out the window every time I come on. I'm only joking.
Oops.
No, but it's wonderful because what it is, it's just it's exciting. But do you have a question for Stephen? And then Amy, I know you've been patiently waiting too. Our wonderful guest presenter, Dr. Amy Robbins, host of the podcast Life, Death and the Space Between. I'd love you to ask Roy, Stephanie and Alexandra a question after Phil and Stephen have had a little reconnection because you met at Oxford University, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. It's such a great day. I'm still basking in the glow of that day. It was really nice. But yeah, nice to see you again, Stephen, and everyone
great
else,
to
of
see
course.
You,
I got this. There's a very personal element that this is bringing up in me as well. But I'm not going to go down that path. I've got very specific questions. I might leave it till after the show. So a more practical question. When a caregiver might shift their mindset from perhaps feeling the challenges that caregiving brings to practicing altruistic love, does science show that this emotional shift actually reduces daytime cortisol stress levels and perhaps, in keeping with the show, open up those pathways that might lead to a more intuitive connection?
Well, surprisingly, so we published a big article about this in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease about a year ago. And we had evidence that this was very emotionally uplifting. When they would see that their loved one was still there, not gone, it made a big difference to them. So they would report emotional transformations, joy, inner peace, fulfillment, and so forth, et cetera. And I could easily send you a copy of that article, Phil, but it's catching on, and I also found that they're much more comfortable with the language of deeply forgetful than with the language of dementia, because it makes them feel that they're still connecting with a real human being. And I'm a total believer in that. I rejected the idea of dementia years ago, and there's so many case studies. I mean, Willem de Kooning was the great abstract expressionist of my generation. And he was diagnosed at Weill Cornell Hospital by Norman Relkin with probable Alzheimer's disease. For 14 years, he managed that with one assistant who would stay in his loft in Greenwich Village. And even to the very end, de Kooning would rise up with his brush, dip it in paint, and go up to his easel. And there was a posthumous exhibit of his later work. And, you know, it was liberating. I mean, that's the positive thing I want to say spiritually. He had a reputation for being dastardly. He would get in fist fights in front of the Café Wa. I grew up in all these areas, you know. And he was one of these, I don't do nothing for nothing, excuse me, type New Yorkers. But the amazing thing about him is that his art, which had been incredibly anxious up until that point, the age of anxiety type work, but it became much more soft and positive, and was really a good example for me of positive psychology. And he did this till the very end of his life. So I think he had a transformation, but I think it was a positive transformation. And I wrote a book about this, you know, and I give about 30 examples of people who actually were able to free themselves of these negative cultural myths and enter into a world of deep forgetfulness. And it was more mystical and more meaningful. And they were identified by their families and by people in the community as becoming more altruistic. So yeah. this is what's actually going on.
And that's dignity for deeply forgetful people, isn't it, Stephen?
That's their dignity.
You mentioned, another great read. Dr. Amy Robbins, I'd loved your perspective here and your questions for Roy, Stephanie, and Alexandra.
Hi, everybody. This has been such an incredible conversation with so many different threads to pull at. But I'm just thinking about sort of where the telepathy tapes has brought us in terms of non-speaking autistic spellers. And what this sort of feels like it could have the potential to do with the other end of the spectrum, and how caregiving could potentially change if we, those of us who are caregiving, change the belief system that we could actually still communicate with the deeply forgetful people. Roy, what would your next book look like if that was the case? Like, you know, Zen caregiving in the spiritual space or something like that. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I think, you know, again, I would come back to the state of mindful, open-hearted presence, right? I think it takes out of the equation you know, the attachment to identity or self-image that so many of us cling to so fiercely. And it puts us in this place of, you know, the soul, or, you know, kind of reclaiming the humanity of the person who's living with the illness, no matter what we call it, in this present moment, right? Yeah. So it allows one that dignity because we're here in this experience, in this moment. So, yeah, I'm really intrigued by what Stephen is sharing. I think, you know, this is an area that I'm not all that familiar with, but I look forward to reading some of the works that you've cited. And I think, you know, cultivating mindfulness is a great pathway to come to this place of, you know, honoring what's still here in the person who's living with this particular type of illness.
Thank you, Roy. Amy, that's a terrific question. And of course, as we go to Stephanie and then Alexandra, of course, meeting in dreams, Kelly and I, Kelly, telepathy dreams, Kelly shared with her sister. I guess that's maybe a new way forward for carers as well, if you can't communicate. Stephanie, you first, then Alexandra.
Oh, I think that the telepathy tapes has really opened up a vast possibility for us universally, because now we can see that, and her, the way she does her experiment, like everything is so sound in terms of how this is being presented. It's not this pie in the sky or wishful thinking that a lot of people might be inclined to dismiss intuitive connection or soul communication. So it's a different world instantly, really. And my world, Stephen, just changed when you told me that dementia is no longer in the DSM.
Yes.
Wow. I'm so happy to eliminate that word from my vocabulary. Thank you.
Alexandra. Thank you, Stephanie.
I agree with the elimination of that word. I think we need to focus on the positive, not what's not there. I feel that from the broader kind of perspective of the evolution that we're going through as a humanity, there's so much going on that is kind of stretching us into our own extrasensory gifts. So we are stepping into telepathic communication, which is more compassionate. It's like going through, many of us are empathic and that we feel things, but we're starting to listen more deeply to people with you know, Alzheimer's and other deep memory loss conditions. But I'm also noticing that we're able to communicate more deeply. We can listen to the animals. We can listen to Mother Earth. We're learning to stretch beyond our capacity. I don't think this is something new. I think it's our birthright. So I think we're just becoming more naturally who we are.
And on that beautiful note, Kelly, we've reached the end, almost the end of another hour. I think though, between us, we could just talk until next week's show. Should we just keep talking?
I think we absolutely should. Well, here's the thing. On our YouTube channel, we're going to do the after show and we're going to find out what Phil was going to ask, because you know I can't think about anything else. And also, I want to talk about Hollywood, because there's been some television and some movies that I think are helpful, and also more about dreams. So yeah, if our producer Johan didn't keep appearing to remind us that there are other programs on UK Health Radio, that we would stay here 24/7. I would never leave
between shows. Honestly, you wouldn't believe it. We just carry on talking. We just carry on doing the show. Perhaps, Kelly, we should think of a cunning plan to remove Health Radio and just stay on air 24/7.
No, how could we? We can't live if living is without Johan. We need him. I love him so much.
I think our listeners too, at the thought of us too, and the guests, the light went out of their eyes. They are imagining themselves trapped in this show on a recurring loop, like a recurring dream, trapped in our Dream Diva Lab radio show lab forever.
Forever. It's like Hotel California. You can check out any time you'd like, but you can never leave. All right. So we want to give so much thanks to our amazing guests that will be, there will be more in the after show. Roy Remmer, Stephanie Banks, Alexandra Wenman, and Dr. Stephen G. Post. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, compassion, and inspiration and teaching us that dementia is no longer a word. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Stephen. And thank you to everyone listening, especially if you are a carer for someone you love. We hope today reminded you that compassion does belong to you too, because caring for yourself is part of caring for others.
Yes, it is. Sleep well, everyone.
Dream deeply.
And when you wake, hold that self-love dream gently in your mind forever. Mwah. Sweet dreams.
Every symbol, every story. He's a brand